Hey, hello everyone. Thanks for listening and welcome to this podcast series through Gonzaga University. And my name's Joe Albert, and today we're going to talk about generational issues in the workplace. And this is part of a series produced by Gonzaga. And I want to thank Sherry Lynch and Emily Clay for their work on producing this and editing and all the other stuff that goes into making this a pretty engaging kind of a program. So, and I have a panel of guests here today that I'm going to introduce in just a second, but mainly I want to introduce my colleague, Dr. Rebecca Burson Beck, and who studies neurons, narrative, and leadership. I love that. And Beck, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Oh, you took my best line, Joe. My name's Beck Burson. I know Joe through the Orgel program. I'm a physician, psychiatrist, mama, and veteran, among a few other things. And just moved to Spokane from North Dakota. And I'm very interested in how people change, both individually and collectively.
Thanks. This will be fun today. We had a great panel, and the topic isn't, it's a complex topic, actually, and we'll get into that. So who I have with us today, Catherine Bell, American Water back in Jersey, Senior Director of Corporate Communications, OD, Employee Engagement, has done a ton of stuff around communications, but also working with employees around motivation and so forth. Tanya Echols, Managing Principal of, Tanya, if I say this right, Vigere. Sorry, she's an executive coach. Her list goes on and on, but executive coach, leadership consultant, diversity, equity, and inclusion strategist, past president of the International Coaching Federation in Georgia. Very dynamic and real lucky to have her here as well. Petra Fetters. Was with BDS Connected Solutions out of Irvine, California, Vice President for Human Resources and Talent Acquisition. Also has done marketing, HR, as a generalist and also recruiter. So these three folks are going to, I think, offer us a lot. And I'm going to let them or invite them to introduce themselves. And what generation, you know, do you identify with, and how are you feeling about doing this today? I'm just curious to start with. So, Catherine, I'll start with you.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be talking about this because I think I hopefully bring a lot of ideas, but also we'll be learning a lot from the panel here. So thanks again. I am highly engaged in employee communication and employee experience. Probably that's the consistent thing where I get my mojo from, frankly, over the last few career stops. Along the way, I really am interested in what motivates employees to contribute to the company's overall successful achievement of its goals, frankly. And generational differences certainly weigh on that a bit. You know, post-pandemic, for sure, things have changed a little bit from pre-pandemic generational differences as well. So I'm really excited to talk about that and learn more about it as well.
Thanks.
And what generation do you identify with and do you agree with?
I call myself a Gen Xer, though I feel some days more like the baby boomer generation leading a team, but I am definitely Gen X.
Cool.
Great. Tanya.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Proud Gen Xer here and excited to be a part of this panel, part of this discussion, because I think this is something, as in the work that I do, I work and I have a lot of passion around helping leaders and organizations create inclusive and supportive and high-performing environments. And this is probably one of the accepted forms of exclusion that we all engage in, and this whole thing around ageism and generational differences. So I'm excited to have this discussion because I think we can hopefully educate and each other and whoever else is out there listening, and also maybe dispel some of the fallacies and the myths that are floating around out there as well. So I'm excited.
Great. Thank you. Petra.
My turn. So I am a Gen Xer, and I am fascinated with how generations and generational experiences, how they shape generational perspectives, and how they influence how we work within the workplace. I would say that Catherine mentioned her mojo, my jam, is really looking at linking how engagement shapes performance and how you can level up performance and build high performing teams through different ways to engage. And I love what Tanya said as well about how this is one of the generational differences, one of the areas where we agree that it's okay to be exclusive. But I do enjoy looking at what brings us together and how we can find connections that we can connect on along the generational lines, and the intersections as well are fascinating to me.
Excellent. Love Thank that. You.
We're going to have such a good time hearing so many different perspectives on this topic. Just kind of to zoom out, like between baby boomers, Gen Xers, millennials, Gen Zs, I imagine all of you see a diversity of conflict in the workplace and those you coach and consult with. When we think about source of conflict, a lot of things can shape that, obviously. Perspectives, beliefs, ethics, attitudes. We all bring things to the table. Our personality, religion, culture, ethnicity, education, social strata, gender experiences. I mean, I'm sure Tanya could run the gamut from DEI, all the different variables, right? So when you think about what is known as a generational gap that is becoming a hot topic, tell me some of your perspectives, some of the things you can speak on in understanding that conflict. Can you each speak to the way you see the generational gap creating challenges in the workplace and different themes that come up that are kind of, contentious?
Happy to jump in on that. Again, I'm excited before you even asked us to do it. You were just talking about it. I'm getting like, oh, this is so good. This is, again, just my take on it, but yeah. Most of, I think, the gaps that we see around generation are the things that we see pretty much in any element of diversity. It's that lack of understanding and communication. And our human nature, and you know, Rebecca, the way our brains work, it really, our first instinct is to blame the things that are different about us as to why you don't understand me and why you don't get what I am or who I am or why I'm different. Because the reality is, Petra and Catherine talked about, there are true differences in what we experience from generation to generation. And there are things that boomers experience that I as a Gen X don't understand, and the millennials and all the other generations to come will experience things in a very different way than I do. And I think it's just a impulsive reaction to say it's because of your age. It's because you haven't experienced my experience. So I'm just going to lay it all at that doorstep, as opposed to what I think is most important is trying to understand each other and embrace our differences so that we all can understand things. And I say that probably with a little bit of sensitivity as a Gen Xer, because we do get sort of lumped in, I think, especially with, you know, sort of the Gen Zers about being boomers. I'm like, I'm not a boomer. And again, that's my own energy around that coming up. But I feel like as a Gen Xer, we feel like we're a little bit of the lost generation because people have skipped us. It's the boomers or it's the millennials and everything else in between. And the reality is, I think we are in many ways the bridge potentially, because we did live in a time when we were very young, when we had three television channels and no cable. And we were also there when this thing called the internet came into being as well. So we live in both those worlds, but I think sometimes we get lumped in one category or the other without anyone ever really trying to understand what our experiences are. And that's what I think the generational gap comes from, is that lack of understanding and then just that knee-jerk reaction to say it's because of your generation.
I love that. So in a sense, we kind of oversimplify by calling it the generational gap, by not truly understanding the rich diversity that makes us unique and the differences in that.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice. How about you?
I think that there's key differences between the values of each generation, and that's primarily because of the experiences that each generation had and what's happening in our world today at different life stages. And I think depending on where, when, on which life stage you have that experience, and it's going to shape what's important to you and your perspectives, but also mostly the needs. The needs are very different in what different generations are looking for from their employers and in the workplace. But at the same time, I think we have to be careful not to stereotype, because as Tanya was talking, I was thinking that as a Gen Xer, I feel like I have one foot in the boomer generation and one foot in the millennial generation. And there are certain days where I feel like I connect more to some of those perspectives versus the other. But it, in a lot of ways, they're generalizations as well. You know, I've had millennials that have worked for me that were more like a Gen Xer or more like a boomer. So we have to remember that they are generalizations and they don't apply one size fits all.
And to add on to that, I hunch that a lot, what I see a lot of when I look at somebody as a generation is the generalizations are made about other generations, but that doesn't really reflect my generation. But then you go ask a different generation and they'll say that very same thing about the person who just gave that feedback. As a Gen Xer myself, and just borrowing off of my own experience, and certainly some really turbulent things that have been going on in the world, I think we continue to adapt as Gen Xers, which is why some days we see ourselves as a baby boomer, or perhaps some days we're more millennial or Gen Z, whatever we're sort of focused on. To me, sometimes millennials and Gen Z sort of fall under the same umbrella. But what I see more and more really as a leader, as a Gen X leader who is leading very often millennials and Gen Z generations, is the common desire for things in the workplace like work-life balance, opportunities to socialize, really passionate about work and wanting to do meaningful work and wanting to do purposeful work, and growing their career. And then when I report into maybe baby boomers or some Gen Xers, the financial stability, the security, the confidence, and the credibility are very big in terms of what I produce at work and what they want to bring to the table and in the workplace as well. And so based off of that, I think, you know, for me to be somebody who's focused on leadership and communication in the workplace, it's really important, I think, to remember that maybe demographics really aren't telling us everything we need to know about how to work across different generations. And instead, you know, look at people who have similar jobs or similar values, or, you know, what is it they want to get out of the workplace? I tend to be shifting more toward this persona identification rather than focused on the generational differences.
I have a question. This goes back to something Petra said, but also, Kathy, you just said. I just read an article, it was 2020 actually, debunking the notion of generational sort of categorizations. And it just struck me as I read it, I thought, oh, I mean, it's more about age maybe or context, but it's mainly about the individual. And you're, you know, and I think, Petra, you suggested coaching people to be interested in the individual, not so much what generation they represent, get to know their story, who they are, what motivates them, that kind of a thing. How do you get people? Because there's a, I think we have a desire to make sense of people. And, you know, we always have to make sense of our situation. That's kind of old research there. But we do it now through generational sort of typing. So, oh, you're a Gen Xer, therefore, you know, how do you get people to think maybe that's just one lens that you can look at people through, but more importantly, what about this particular individual? What drives, what motivates them? What brings them a sense of fulfillment? I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
I love that question, Joe, so much, because two things can be true at the same time. That the reality is that in my experience, I actually have a mother who, I was a late child, so my mother was technically part of the silent generation. I have siblings who are boomers. I'm an Xer, right? And my whole life now is dealing with all of these generations. And the reason I think it's important that we keep both in mind, especially when we talk about from an organizational leadership development standpoint, is that the context does impact how we view the world. But then we also, and that's part of us having the cultural curiosity and awareness to recognize that for some people who weren't even born before 9/11, the concept of going to the airport is very different because we have a context of remembering what that was like before. So the context matters. Context matters in the world that we grew up in. But as with any aspect and dimension of diversity, ultimately, it is about the person in front of you. And the more that we can start to allow those two things to exist in the same place, and that I may have been influenced by things that were just the reality of the world I grew up in, I also, based on the household that I grew up in and the experiences I've had within my skin and my experience, and for me as an African-American woman, is going to be very different than someone else. And so that's why as a coach, it's always both of these things being true. And we want to help our leaders and our organizations understand what's the context that my person may be coming from. And also, how does that individually impact them? So what I like to do is to really bring both of those together, because sometimes by understanding the context, we can help individuals understand each other and themselves on a deeper level to know, obviously, there's a reason everything happens and how we choose to show up in the world. And having the context as well as focusing on the individual, both things can be true at the same time.
Yeah. And I love those intersections. It's almost like, you know, one of them is a springboard of, you know, this is an understanding of generalizations, but then that springboard takes you into understanding that person's individual background. You're a Gen Xer, I'm a Gen Xer. I spent the first 12 years of my life living in a communist country, and that shaped my perspective of the view. Your experience was probably different, unless you grew up in a communist country. So that has a lot to do, even though we may be the same generation, of the imprint that it left on us. So I love the way that you answered it. Both things can be true.
Yeah. And I
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think to Joe, you know, in thinking about your question, like, how do we get there where we see past the generation? I think we are getting shoved into the future big time, post-pandemic for sure. You know, I think also to the social and political turbulence that's going on in the world as well. I don't remember a time in my career where I've had a lens into literally somebody's home that works for me, somebody's home where we're meeting virtually, you know, their cat's walking across the chair and everything. I know your cat's name now. I know your kids when they wake up from their nap. So to me, I feel like more and more we're seeing into the personal lives of employees. And then also, you know, given the social and political, you know, events and activities that are going on in the world, there's a super, super, sort of wave of focus on inclusion and diversity, seeing the whole person. And so I think if we only stick with the generation, certainly as a leader, my employees are going to make me see the full picture. You know, I think never before have they felt more comfortable to speak up, to share the personal things going on in their life. And also, frankly, demanding support in balancing all of those demands, both personally and professionally in their lives. And so we're sort of being thrust into the future as leaders and as a workplace. And certainly the job market, as robust as it has been in months past, if employees aren't going to get that sort of full picture at work or from you as a leader, they're going to find the company that will offer that to them because they will leave. As we see turnover rates and the great resignation and quiet quitting, these are all things that as a leader and I'm reading up on to really understand how is this new world affecting employee engagement. So we really must see beyond the generation to really do what's right by people so they can bring their best selves to work.
Excellent. Thanks.
I love that. And I know Joe and I have talked a lot in conversation about how we need to be seen and be heard and be valued within an organization to want to stay. And the question of like, what is the purpose of having a label, a generation? And is there ever a efficiency to that? And I just can't help but think, big picture, you know, we are born and we notice everything. We have a very inefficient brain. It's like, oh, wow, I've got fingers. Oh, wow. You know, I notice everything. And then neuronally, we go through this stage called pruning where our neurons get more efficient in coming up with ways to see patterns in the world. And then some might say mental health issues or mental illness is when we have such an efficient brain that we get stuck in these groups of depression, addiction, anxiety, OCD. There are these patterns that we recognize that we have a hard time getting out of. And so just kind of bringing the philosophical question of, is there an efficiency or is there a purpose to label the generations? Like, do you ever see that helping in your organization? And if not, what's a good way to invite that conversation of, I'm getting to know you. How is a way that I can see you, hear you, value you by knowing X about you? I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Love that. It's a great question because, and as you know, it's human nature to gravitate toward these in-groups and out-groups. And that's a lot of the work that we do around understanding difference in that we associate with an in-group for, in our first system. Our first system is our family. So that's something that we do pretty much from, or whatever structure we're a part of, whether it's our actual biological family or not. The thing, again, I'm never a big fan of labels if they're used to limit us. Mm-hmm. If my labels give me context, if they give me a sense of, or help to add to my identity, then labels can be helpful for me in knowing the things that I want to do and how I want to move forward. How do I want to progress in this organization? How do I want to develop my career? But the other side of that is, it's just understanding that limitation. Because one of the things, I've worked with a lot of leaders recently, especially Gen Xers, because again, we did live in that middle phase where for most of us, when we left college, we were taught you need to stay at that job at least 5 years or you're going to look like you can't hold a job. You're going to look like you're unstable. And to hear that now, the question would be, why have you been at that job for 5 years? Why are you still at the same company, right? So to understand the context that someone might be experiencing the workplace in, that as someone, again, from my experience and the leaders, many of the leaders I work with now are in that Gen X age group, the way we engage at work can be different if we're not consciously thinking about building relationships and thinking about work-life balance, because we were still that holdover of just go in and work as hard as you can and nobody really cares about your feelings and just get it done. And I think the benefit we have is because we've lived through all these decades now at this point, we also have stepped into and adopted that awareness. And I think we were some of the change agents for that awareness because we all got burned out that isn't all there is to life. So I think we have actually been some of the people at the forefront, which I think has created the space for the millennials and who carried it on in a much more demonstrative way, I think, than we did towards kind of the middle of our careers. And now it's almost expected that those are the questions. I coach someone who's just coming out of college, who's about to graduate soon. And one of the questions she's asking in her interviews is, what about work-life balance? And I would have never asked that in my lifetime. I would now, but I didn't when I was, 20 years old. And so just understanding the context of my generation can help me understand, wait, why do I do the things that I do? Or why is my first thought this? So I think that the labels, if they don't limit us, I'm okay with that as long as they don't confine us, because that's where we start to lose our ability to evolve and grow. But I think also the labels can help us understand why we may behave and engage in the way we do, so we can then more intentionally make different choices by recognizing I'm operating off of rules that were given to me and based on the time frame that I grew up in.
Yeah.
I love that, Tanya.
About context, right? Or think about, I would have never thought when I first got out of college in my interviews to ask about an organization's global citizenship. What are you doing as a company to make a better world today? You know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was, you know, companies stay away from politics, companies stay away from social type of issues. And then the last few years, we've really seen all of that blow up. And when the pandemic hit and conversations about remote work and hybrid work started happening, that's when I really saw the differences that showcased by generation, how, you know, the baby boom generation, how they grew up and how they were used to working. And that was the way to work, the future of work. While millennials are like, well, wait a second, just because it was like that doesn't mean that it has to be like that. Like there's some value. So for me, it was just fascinating to watch, and looking at it through the filter of the generations really helped me do exactly what Tanya said, which is gave me context to try to appreciate those perspectives and understand that, you know, they're not old school. Boomers aren't old school. They're not being traditional. It's just what they know. It's how we used to work for decades. And things are being reshaped now. So, and a lot of it is this push and pull between generations, which is actually beautiful because that's how we grow.
Yeah. You know, I think too, these generational labels were helpful for us to just understand, you know, how initially I would suppose when organizational development was sort of kind of really growing and people were learning more about what is this OD space? What does that mean? Labels were a great way for us to really get to know people on a very basic level. And it helped us with, you know, in the communication space, a lot of the change management programs we did, particularly technology transformations, we used a lot of generational characteristics to understand how to shape a change plan. For example, you know, I work at a water company, and guys and gals out in the field are in a truck and they fix your water meter, but they need to record that information. And was riding along in a truck and trying to figure out, like, how do you do this without, you know, having any kind of digital space to do that in? And the gentleman pulls out a shoebox, beaten up shoebox that had a bunch of index cards in it. And he would take the index card and he would write on the index card that he changed your meter. And when he did that, it would go in the back of the shoebox. And that's how we managed customer records. So imagine this person now is going to have to learn how to use a computer and logins and passwords and security and helping to see the commonality of what was at the time a baby boomer generation and how technology really wasn't helping them get their job done and moving them to showing them the benefits of technology and helping them build those skills. The generational labels helped a bit, even for myself, because as Petra said, you know, we were introduced to the World Wide Web, probably at college age and beyond. And so it's not something we grew up with. I literally had an employee that did not know what a mouse was for a computer and had to be taught how to use a mouse. And this was only, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. So it's helped. I think now, you know, I think a great thesis would be studying whether it's time to retire generational labels, given that, you know, humans are so much more than the year that they were born in. And, you know, Tanya, it sounds like you have a wealth of knowledge in that space, really around inclusion and diversity and equity. And what does that really mean? And is it limited to your generation that you're born in? And I think we all sound like we agree that it's not.
I like this construct that, you know, if you zoom out, if you're doing research, if you're trying to develop programs, understanding some aggregate similarities and differences between the groups and the cohorts is helpful. But if you zoom in and you're in relationship with somebody, we want to be understanding them through story, through their self-identification of their values, their needs. I like that construct.
And that's, I'll just add something too. And that's years ago, they asked Oprah Winfrey, you know, what she learned from all the interviews she had done. And she said, everybody wants to be seen, you know. And I think when you categorize somebody generationally, there is a confinement in a way that occurs. And I don't know if you see the person then, you know, and there's so much value in that sort of sense of being understood and valued. And if you, you know, if however you want to do that. But I think stories, for me at least, is a way to kind of learn about someone and what's unique about them and what drives and motivates them. So go ahead. I cut somebody off, I think.
I would love to ask Joe a question, actually, because you're the baby boomer on this call. And I'm just curious if you've felt that you've been labeled in a way that really has limited you. From your perspective, it would be interesting to me to see if baby boomer has helped or hindered you.
Oh, I think probably more hurt than anything. I mean, in a funny kind of way, I'm sort of proud, you know, Vietnam and all this stuff. I used to be real involved with social justice work, you know, and that was cool. And I'm proud of that era, you know, generationally of what we accomplished. But what's harder for me, and it's my own fault mostly, is like when I'm teaching, and I always, and those of you that have had me in class know this, I'll struggle with the technology, you know, or something, and everybody will joke about, you know, well, there's another boomer, you know, going through, you know, so it's one of those things when I kind of laugh about it, but it's like, well, I don't want to feel confined, you know, I'm not, because I'm going, you know, I had a rough year last year, my wife died, I had a heart attack and all. And so there's a sense of, for me at least, of discovering new possibilities for myself, like who am I now, you know, with all these changes I've experienced. And the labeling has that feeling of categorization, which feels limiting to me, you know. And so I kind of just tried to duck it, I guess, as best I can, and just do my thing and whatever, you know, and try to, I don't know, like play music again. I haven't done that in years, you know, and people are like, well, aren't you kind of, I said, no, I'm not kind of old. Okay. I'm kind of interested in playing music. That's what I'm kind of doing here, you know? So, I mean, good question. And I feel like it can be limiting, and I sort of do just duck it. So, yeah.
All right. I love that. And you know, when I did some research before this discussion, I asked my 7-year-old daughter, you know, what were her thoughts? And I think we'll find the humor, but it's very limiting. Millennials, when I gave the age range, she said, they're exciting and pretty. Gen Xers fix things and they're loving and caring. And then boomers, Joe, I hate to say it, she said, not as smart, nice, fix things but don't make things.
Oh, boy.
You know, but I mean, it's sort of a hyperbole of how we all want to come up with these efficient systems to label people. And like Tanya said, it can be very limiting and not lead to understanding. And Joe, I love how you're demonstrating that you can live beyond your label and not be confined by it. And I think all of us probably to some degree, when we identify with what generation we are, we think of all the negative things and we go, oh, but that's not me. I'm curious because I know we're kind of rounding the corner to that space of, you know, our listeners are probably wondering, yeah, what now? I go to work and I still have a boss who tells me that I can't use my stand-up desk because it looks unprofessional. Or, yeah, so what? You know, I work with somebody who tells me that I look unprofessional because I'm wearing something that helps me express myself. What would each of you have to say to our listeners as far as how to meaningfully manage these conflicts and these challenges that do come up? And if we did zoom out, they might fit into an aggregate of the generational gap of these different generations that have had different experiences and beliefs and values and ethics. And how that creates tension. If you could just let our listeners know what your thoughts are on what to take with them.
So I think that labels came in handy and were valuable because we weren't really giving permission to bring emotions and our full selves to the workplace. And as that is becoming more accepted, and we're throwing away the taboos, and we're starting to talk about mental health in the workplace, and we're breaking down some of these walls between, like, this is my professional life and this is my personal life. I don't talk about my personal life and my personal feelings, or even feelings, you know, don't belong in the workplace. That's shifting and that's changing. And we're being allowed to do that and have those conversations and say, hey, we're human beings. We all have struggles and we all feel things, and it's okay to be able to talk about it. And it should be okay to talk about it with your coach and your boss. So I think that labels can be valuable and they can help, but they're only a springboard. They're not the ultimate place that you're trying to go. And the individualistic aspect of who we are as humans and how we feel and how we experience things, the more we open that up, I think that, you know, the more we can have meaningful dialogue, you know, and say, you know, you look really unprofessional. I don't want you to use your stand-up desk because you look very unprofessional. It's like, what does that mean? Let's give permission to have that conversation. Like, what does unprofessional mean to you? You know, where is this person coming from? You know, where they gave you that label, you know, through what filter are they looking at, or through, I guess.
Yeah. It sounds like having trust that we are evolved enough to have the difficult conversations and not just stop at a label.
I think the data that you see today of turnover rates, of people, again, this idea of quietly quitting, I'm just going to do what it takes to check the box on my workday today and nothing more. There are growing rates of that happening. And I think it's because companies are sort of digging their heels in and not becoming more human. We really have to see the whole human in our approach when it comes to leading people and inspiring them to bring their best to the workplace every day. You know, we all have lives, and those lives are why we're working to some degree, right? I mean, there's purpose in there, but at the end of the day, I'm not doing this for free, right? So, you know, you have to accept that whole person, and we have needs at work and home, and good companies address the needs of their people, regardless of your generation, regardless of your marital status or your ethnicity or, you know, your sexual preference, whatever it may be. And so when I look at Gen X, and I have to train my brain, right, to see all of those things, because naturally, you know, that unconscious bias is out there. I gravitate to people who look like me and speak like me and talk like me and have lives like me. So it is a shift. And this new norm of hybrid and remote work arrangements seem to be forcing the issue of recognizing that whole person. And, you know, on the flip side, I think, too, what does happen when you're not coming to work every day, when you're not going to a workplace every day, is that maybe some of the individual contributions that you make in your workday are going unrecognized, right? So sometimes it's not just about saying, yeah, you can use your stand-up desk and sure, you can wear jeans, you know, dress for your day is what we say. We say dress for your day. If you have a good meeting, dress nicely. If you're not really meeting with anybody, I wore a shirt and I almost wore jeans today because you know, right now we can all see each other in a Zoom meeting, but I dress for my day. But at the same time, you know, it's really important for companies to continue to recognize the whole person, whether you're at that stand-up desk or you're sitting in your dining room table. That's where I think, you know, we really need to make sure leaders are aware of how important that is as well.
I'll jump in here and thanks Petra and Catherine both for those wonderful insights. I think I come back to what I shared earlier is holding both things true. That is the complexity of the work we do as a society, as humanity, towards diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and justice is the realization that yes, I am a whole person. And part of that whole person that was shaped by that was the time frame I grew up in, the household I grew up in, the culture I came from. And we can't separate one of those from the other. And while we do want to honor the whole person for sure, that doesn't mean I strip away their experiences, their background, the context of where they came from to make us all this one thing that everyone can accept. The beauty of being able to hold both space for both of these things is that I could understand if I came from a different organization that was a startup, right? So that startup, and we just all kind of came in organically, took on jobs, and it was very agile and flexible, and we moved, and just everybody did what they needed to do. And then someone else comes from another organization that was very hierarchical with a lot of power distance, right? And so coming into this new company, I'm going to have a very different experience. So just the same with my generation. I understand that where I've come from and what I was taught that brought me to being in the same room with someone from three or four different generations is going to influence the way I show up. So what I would share from my own brain to everyone else is to understand the context of someone's experience that is just as valuable as also understanding the individual in front of you. And we have to do both, because if we start to just look at, okay, let's just look at who you are on the inside, it's like we're negating everything that brought us into that place. So I really just want everyone to maybe consider, and I invite everyone to consider, how do I use context and culture and diverse backgrounds to create understanding and empathy, while then I also show up in front of the person in front of me and learn about their personal experiences and what that means for them, that I can have both that cultural curiosity and that willingness to learn about someone's context, as well as wanting to learn about the human who's standing in front of me. And the more we can do both of those, I think that creates an environment where we can truly embrace the fullness of who we are and not have to strip anything away just to feel like, okay, this makes more sense. So I hope that kind of connects for everyone, but that's kind of the big takeaway I have, that we can do both with empathy and understanding.
Yeah,
absolutely. So well said. And everything you guys have shared has just resonated and sparked good conversation, good thoughts. You know, I think for me in closing, and then we'll let Joe have all the pressure of really sealing the deal here. But for me in closing, everything you guys have said as far as labels, not to limit, but to understand the both and, seeing people as human, and just trusting the evolution that is happening of our potential. And, you know, when we think of the brain, and we have brain 1.0, that is the amygdala, and it's fight or flight or freeze. And it's very basic. It's very efficient, and it's binary. It's this or that. And then we have the frontal cortex, which is much more complex and making executive decisions of what do I want and how am I going to get there? And this conversation is about what do we want and how are we going to get there? And just one last thought on the humanity aspect. I'm reminded of Eric Erickson and his stages of development. And for the span of working years, roughly 20 to 65, there's two main challenges. The first one is intimacy versus isolation. How do I manage the complexity of relationships? How do I value tenderness? How do I love freely? So there's this challenge of love, this ultimate aim of love, and then generativity versus stagnation. This idea of how do I care for others? How do I insert my passion into what I do? How do I practice empathy and concern? So this hierarchy of love and care that really does bind us, regardless of what generation we're in, and trying to see each other and the good, and not excluding, oh, you don't know how to do this, but we're all trying to figure it out.
The human connection. Wasn't there a article or some theory at one point that came out that not the opposite of depression, but that like the human connection or connecting with people in many ways is the antidote, if that's the right word, to when we're isolated, when we're not connecting with people, that's typically when we're not fulfilled. And so now for us to be able to have that in the workplace is amazing. And I think there's a lot more people hopefully that love what they do and have a passion for their work because they're allowed to bring their whole self to work. And hopefully others have empathy in terms of where they're coming from and their perspectives, maybe because of some form of label or maybe because of just getting to know their own personal journey and background.
And to be aware that those labels are a part of that, right? Even though we're calling it a label, it really is the context that I grew up in. Whether it's my race, my culture, my language, my age, what's behind that label is an experience.
Like, I'm a mother, and that is a label, but it's a role, but also, like, I connect to the group of mothers. Like, we have a common experience and things that we go through or that we feel that other groups may not necessarily experience, just like, you know, being a woman in the workplace and what that means to me and how I connect with other women that maybe a man may not be able to understand just because of different experiences.
And I would say to those listening, you know, if in your workplace or in your universities or in your communities, you have resource groups of African-American, Black communities that come together to solve the world's problems, or LGBTQ+, or mothers, right? That those areas that you feel there's a gap in your knowledge of the whole person, you go to those community meetings. So we do that here in our workplace. We have employee resource groups, and we have folks who identify as allies. We have folks who identify as the community, right? And us coming together, I will tell you, has created this very robust culture at our company of understanding and respect. We listen more and talk less these days, which is really kind of nice. And so I would encourage you to, you know, step outside that comfort zone and really get to know people beyond their generation.
Thank you, guys. I need to jump in and we need to wrap up.
Do this for 2 more hours, right?
Yeah, you could actually. So, Catherine, Petra, Tonya, thank you so much for joining us. Beck, as always, you're fantastic. And I'll end with this. And it's a notion that I'm sort of drawn to, and it's the difference between clarity and certainty. And I think so often we want to know, we want to be certain about something. And but I think the notion of clarity, which is, say, a deeper understanding of someone, for example, is going to serve us more and benefit the organization in a much greater way, I think, than just labeling people, which gives you kind of a certainty. Yeah, they're a boomer, they're a Gen X, or whatever it is. And so highly encourage you to Edgar Schein's book about humble inquiry, which is always, it's about leadership through asking, through questions. And that offers you an opportunity to get clear about who people are. And that's a tremendous sort of approach, I think, to leadership and your ability to tolerate ambiguity, you know, until you do get to know someone, and that's okay. And it's not easy, but it's one of the challenges of leadership. And so with that, we will wrap up. Next month, the topic will be on forgiveness. And Beck and I have talked a little bit about rupture and repair. We may focus more on that, actually. And so it'll be a neat segment anyway. So thank you again for listening. I really appreciate it. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we will see you next month. All right. Take care.